300 Fumblerooski episodes were filmed before Robert Saleh was fired as head coach of the Jets. I'm Adam Wright. You're listening to the Fumblerooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumblerooski podcast for our 300th episode. And it took that long for the Jets to fire their current head coach. Yes, we have had this podcast around as long as his tenure as a New York Jet. And what a day to have our 300th episode. And that's not all we have going on. The Ravens beat the Bengals in an absolute thriller in a game, a matchup we will break down as potentially the game of the year in 2024. We also have the Texans who outlasted the Bills. Josh Allen doing more with less, working against a juggernaut Texans team and very nearly completing that comeback. He just doesn't have much to work with this year. And we'll preview the Seahawks and the 49ers in what is going to be a very rare potential showdown matchup on Thursday Night Football. You don't usually get good matchups during those slates of games, but we're going to hit on the Jets first. So I just want to break down how this whole thing happened. So a few years ago, just ahead of the 2021 season, Robert Saleh was hired as head coach of the New York Jets. And the Jets didn't have much as far as a roster goes at that point. And during his span, they did add some good players. They drafted on defense exceptionally well. They also brought in some good players on the offensive side. They have now Garrett Wilson. They have Mike Williams. They have Breece Hall. They have a completely overhauled and revamped offensive line. And to cap it all off, they traded for Aaron Rodgers. Now, Rodgers, up until now, has not been healthy. And within a few snaps of his Jets career, he tore his Achilles. So Robert Saleh, up until this point, has had excuses for his teams not playing well. Now all the chips were pushed to the center of the table. All of his ducks were in a row. And you start 2-3. And it was not a good these were not games where you could look at and you could say, yeah, they're 2-3, but there's a lot of things to be positive about. There really isn't. It is, and I've pointed this out earlier on this season. I believe it is football malpractice that you have the offensive weapons that you have and you start 2-3 in unconvincing fashion, by the way. Not a good 2-3 where you're like, well, they have some potential. No. Aaron Rodgers looks old. He looks beaten up behind a new offensive line. They have so many weapons that just feel underutilized. This defense for the Jets has been horrendously underperforming. I mean, this is about as deserved as it gets. And I'm honestly kind of shocked it wasn't sooner. I'll let you guys go.
A part of me, like, yeah, obviously last year when the whole thing him voicing his frustrations about having Zach Wilson as his quarterback. You know, last year I was saying that Saleh probably should get fired at some point. But at the end of the day, I knew, you know, they're going to have Saleh in there as the head coach for at least a full season of Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. I'm very surprised that he gets fired 5 weeks into the season, to be honest, you know, because of the fact that, yeah, he's had the excuse of Zach Wilson being his quarterback, but you could kind of see little tinkles here and there of him potentially not being a good coach. And, you know, then we kind of see some games go by. They lose to the 49ers. Not great game, which, I mean, it's the 49ers lost in the Super Bowl. Basically had the same team. And then they beat the Titans. Titans have a pretty decent defense, but you would have thought that they would have really whooped their ass. And then they do whoop the Patriots' ass, but really they should have put up 50 on the Patriots. And then they lose 10-9 against the Broncos, a game where Bo Nix throws no more than 70 passing yards. And then they look terrible in London against the Vikings. At the end of the day, you could see it coming, but in my eyes, I would have thought it would have been, it would have been after the season was over that this would happen.
CJ?
You know, I was one of those people that said, even though I'm a Pats fan, about Robert Saleh, like, hey, you know, he's got Zach Wilson. Hey, he can't he gets a mulligan for last year because literally all their plans just went immediately into the garbage when Aaron Rodgers went down after not even 10 snaps. And then there's just this season. And I feel like a lot of the reason they were fired is just because the amount of hype they had surrounding them, right? The New York media kind of low-key dug the Jets' grave. They were talking endless amounts of trash. You had the fans doing their dirty work on Twitter. You had the players like Sauce Gardner saying, ooh, you better be ready for this year. We're gonna get you. But like Chris said, you lost to the Niners, understandable. You barely beat the Titans that have a human meme at quarterback. Congratulations, you wailed on the Patriots. Ooh. You somehow lost to the Broncos, didn't even have triple digits in passing yardage. And then Aaron Rodgers throws an uncharacteristic three-pick game for against the Vikings in London. That is abysmal. That is just wrong. And when you consider the expectations that the Jets had on them, starting a very unconvincing 2-3 is not good. Because like I said, even their two wins, you literally beat a team in the Patriots that's deep in a rebuild, and the Titans, who, you know, they're the Titans. So honestly, it might have been for the best, because even when he had Zach Wilson, there were just some very questionable decisions being made. And for right now, the interim head coach is Jeff Ulbrich, who is their defensive coordinator. And if I'm being real, I just, okay, I guess. I mean, no one really ever considered him a future head coaching hire. Nobody really. I mean, the Jets have a good defense, but I don't know if Ulbrich's head coaching material. But I know with all the Jets fans saying, oh, we got rid of Saleh, we're going to be good, right? Are you? Are you, though? Because you got to remember, Saleh is just one half of the gruesome twosome in New York. The other half, of course, is Nathaniel Hackett. He's still there, and I don't care if he was an Aaron Rodgers merchant in Green Bay. That man is not the OC that he once was. So just because of Hackett's just general horrible spirit looming over that offense, I don't see them getting better. In fact, with such a head coaching change, I don't even think that their season is going to turn around. We're just going to see more of the same. Not to mention, finally, can we finally admit Aaron Rodgers fans, Jets fans, and whatever Packers fans still like him? He's not that guy anymore. We always say, ooh, he's a bad man. No, not anymore. He's not, because I looked at his numbers, and even still, he's just very average. I mean, he's not the reason they're winning games. There is a difference between winning with someone versus winning because of them. And they're not winning anything because of Rodgers. And when I look at his best game on the year, what was it? It was against New England. That was like 77% completion, 281 yards, and two touchdowns. That's his best game. And even still, it's okay. So there's that.
Yeah. Tuck?
I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I was surprised when I got the notification when I was in class. I was like, what? Already? But then I realized last week, Eric Mangini went on record and saying, if the Jets lost in London, Woody Johnson would probably fire Robert Saleh, because Woody Johnson didn't want to lose in front of certain friends in London. So if they lost, Robert Saleh is gone. Now looking back at it, I didn't really think he would get fired. I think his situation is unfortunate because I think the circumstances surrounding his firing weren't exactly his fault. I don't think he wanted the OC that is there. I think he is there strictly because of Aaron Rodgers, which is Nathaniel Hackett. But again, that's not. They shouldn't have lost to the Broncos. They should have won that game handily, if I'm being honest. If Bo Nix is passing for only 70 yards, you should win that game quite easily. And the fact that they didn't tells me more about the Jets offense than tells me about the whole Jets team. That whole offense right now is a mess. And if they don't figure out soon, it doesn't matter who's the head coach. They're not going anywhere, nowhere.
Yeah. Also, the timing, one last piece before we move on. The timing of it paired up with the Davante Adams rumors that he could become a Jet. He's been paired up with the Jets in a few trade rumors, with Aaron Rodgers obviously being on the team. The Jets are in win now mode. After a 2-3 start and seeing a firing this early on, you have to think that they're going to do a little bit more to shake things up. And adding Davante Adams, another explosive playmaker, to pair up with Garrett Wilson, to add in there with Mike Williams, there's something that could turn things around and could help kind of – it'll definitely change the tides of this season for the Jets if they go ahead and make that move. Davante Adams is in win now mode. He's going to be 32. He's 32 this season. He's going to be 33 next year. No one's going to take on his contract who are currently in bad financial situations. There's something that's a potential deal that could be made very soon.
Yeah, one more thing before we move on. Tuck mentioning the whole thing with Woody Johnson not wanting to lose in London in front of certain associates. I think that makes the reports about surrounding Saleh's firing make a little bit more sense, because the way it happened was extremely, extremely disrespectful, right? Saleh comes in, business as usual, not expecting much. All of a sudden, Woody Johnson comes in, fires him. Escorts him out with security. Doesn't even give him a chance to address his team that he got fired. Like every other coach in the NFL that has ever been fired in the middle of the season has at least been given a chance. Even Jeff Fisher, who has one of the worst winning percentages of all time, had a chance to address his team after he got fired. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I also wonder if there's a little more that went on there. If he was escorted out by security, maybe he had some sort of a reaction to it where it's like, this shit ain't my fault. This and this are happening. And it's like, dude, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
This team sucks. This roster is really good and you're doing nothing with it. You've had the chance for 3 years. What the hell's going on here? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. We may never know. But
that's we're just reading the surface of the original report, really.
Exactly. All right. Up next, the Ravens. What a crucial one. Not just in their division race, but in their chances for everybody's chances in the conference to come out and represent in the Super Bowl. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 Secret Weapon Consulting. Adam Wright, Justin Tucker, CJ Medeiros, Chris Kostich. A full house for this episode to talk about what is potentially, as I teased when we began this episode, the game of the year. And this is a matchup that 41-38, the Ravens won this game. And before this game happened, when we were previewing this matchup, when we were talking about, when we were giving our game picks, we said, do not be fooled by this Bengals team and their record. They've been looking better and better as the season has gone on. They just won their first game. If you let them win a second, then the AFC North is within their grasp. They have a couple of winnable games right after that. They're right back in the thick of things, and they're going to cause problems for the entire conference. And the Bengals were ahead for most of this game. And Lamar Jackson playing keep up. This was, I have to say, this was the most convincing game that I have seen from Lamar Jackson that he has ever played. A lot of the games that he has really stuffed the stat sheet were from games where they were already playing ahead. He was able to play with that rush first offense. And I always said, if he ever played from behind, it would be a punch in the mouth and he would have a very hard time coming back. This is one of those games. If you were ever part of the crowd I was part of it. This is one of those games where it completely contradicts that, because he did a great job with keeping pace. He was able to throw the football effectively out of 42 times, completing 26% of his passes, 26 of his passes, 350 yards and 4 touchdown passes. Was able to keep up with a pass first offense with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins, bringing out some of their best punches that I have seen the Bengals ever throw out. This Bengals team was in desperation mode. They needed this game, and letting them back into the conference race would have meant hell for everybody. I'm not talking just the Ravens, the Texans as well, the Bills, the Chiefs, all of these teams that are in contention looking to make it through the playoffs and make it to a Super Bowl. The Bengals would have been one of the biggest barriers to that you could possibly see. That team, when they're competitive, is very dangerous. And the Ravens may have just exterminated them for the season. Yeah, I mean, the Ravens did everyone in the conference a service by making this Bengals team 1-4. Lots of takeaways from the Bengals past that. The fact that they just threw out their best punches and they're still 1-4. Their future is in doubt right now. But I want to focus on the Ravens. And I know we just went in a different order, but Tuck, I'll give you the floor to start.
I think it's only right if Tuck goes first.
Man, we already know the Ravens fan. First things first. Shout out to Joe Burrow, even though it hurts me to say it. Joe Burrow actually played a lot better than some media critics give him credit. He threw for 392 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. But he played amazing football. He had me nervous for every single second of that game, because whenever he had the ball, it just seemed like it's a touchdown to Ja'Marr Chase. It's a touchdown to T. Higgins. It just felt like their day until the fourth quarter. You know who showed up. Number 8, Superman cape on himself. All of a sudden, touchdown Lamar Jackson, and we're back in it. Joe Burrow drops back, throws the ball, tries to throw that slant to Ja'Marr Chase, intercepted. Finally, someone in the Ravens secondary showed up that day. Thank you, Marlon Humphrey. You owed me one. We get into field goal range. We kick the field goal. Wanted more than that, but I'll settle because it's Justin Tucker. Thankfully, he made the 56-yard. He was struggling from 50-plus yards this year. He bounced back on Sunday. Then the Bengals, with a chance to win the game, tried to drive down the field. Didn't make it. They had to punt the ball, and then we head into overtime. The Ravens have the ball. We're marching down the field. We're doing everything right. All of a sudden, Lamar Jackson takes his eyes off the ball, and he fumbles. And it's not like the one where he scored a touchdown. It just went from bad to worse, because then the ball gets kicked back, and then the Bengals recover, and they're on our side of the field. First heart attack. I was getting close. That was the first heart attack. Second.
Oh, boy.
How many heart attacks did you have?
I had 2, because I really thought he was going to make that kick. Then they ran the ball for 3 times, which I thought it was strange, because if I have Joe Burrow playing lights out like the way he was, I would at least try to throw a pass, because our secondary just didn't show up. And the fact that they ran the ball 3 times, I'm thankful for that, because what happens next? McPherson lines it up. The holder botches the snap, and it goes wide left. And I was like, oh, my God. Thank you. Oh, my God. That's two. And then the Ravens get the ball back, and the rest is history. Derrick Henry had 14 carries for 40 yards. That one carry in overtime, 51 yards down to the five, and the game is over when Justin Tucker makes the game-winning kick. Oh, hats off to the Ravens offense. They came to play. That defense needs to play better. No, that's inexcusable. I'm happy we got the win. I'm pissed off at the way my defense played. But all in all, the Bengals have a lot to work on. I'm surprised that they're 1-4 now. But I'm happy they're out of the division race right now. But I'm not going to say they're down and out yet, because if they keep playing like the way they're playing, they can beat a lot of teams out there. I'm not even – the whole AFC right now is in shambles, because there's a lot of like 2-3 teams, 3-2 teams. So I don't see them completely out the race. But if they lose another one, yeah, it's going to be tough. But I don't see them out the race yet.
All right, CJ.
I remember just watching this game, watching it be a huge back and forth, and I thought to myself, okay, these teams might be legit, but you know, only one can win, and of course that was Baltimore. Now this game, even though it's only week five, I think means a lot more than people realize. For starters, the Ravens have officially made the Bengals 1-4. 1-4 is notoriously difficult to come back from, and you already have four losses on the year for, like I said, the Bengals. And just looking at that, it makes you realize your margin of error has decreased that much more. If you drop another 2-3 games, you very well could be out of the playoffs come January. Like, you might just be, what was it, like the ninth seed. You might, or eighth or ninth, however, whatever number of people are led in. I think it's seven. So you might be the eighth. You might just be on the outside looking in. Because, I mean, sure, you got the Browns there to comfort you at the bottom. But hell, record-wise, even Pittsburgh's better than you. And Pittsburgh is literally just playing conservative their entire thing. And they're just beating up on, let's face it, Charmin soft teams. And the Ravens, oh boy, y'all needed that, let me tell you. Because first, I will give the Bengals credit. Their offense has been playing better. But oh my God, that defense is absolutely atrocious for Cincy. And I think Baltimore is able to capitalize on that. Because when you have, you know, someone like Lamar Jackson, who we have been critical of playing from behind, right? We've all said, like, we have our concerns that maybe Lamar, you know, isn't the best at playing from behind when he's forced to not rely on the ground game. It could get dicey. But no, he flipped that narrative on its head. And the fact that it was a division game, I think, makes it all the more impressive. So, you know, Ravens right now tied for the division lead. I think they actually have it over the Steelers just due to them scoring more points, I think. I don't know how that works.
It's usually, I mean, if they, it's usually based off a division record at that point.
Ah, fair. So, yeah. So we all know, you know, like I said, Ravens lost a heartbreaker to the Chiefs. Then, you know, they somehow dropped that game to the Raiders. Then they rattle off three straight wins against good teams, beating the Cowboys, stomping the Bills, and getting that OT stunner against the Ravens. Next week, I'm interested in, because you're playing the Commanders. And the Commanders might not sound intimidating, but, oh man, Jaden Daniels is legit. For the Ravens, I just say, look at that defense. It's been kind of shaky. But other than that, they should be fine. And like I said, for the Ravens, you've put yourself in prime. I know, like I said, I know it's week five, but you've put yourself in prime position to take this division. All the stars are aligning. But for Cincy, you better rattle off like 5 to 6 straight wins fast, because like I said, another loss or two and it's just going to get that much harder.
So real quick, just to build off of what CJ was saying about the Ravens being atop the division, they are atop of the division because the Ravens-Bengals game is the only AFC North game that has been played so far.
Mm-hmm.
So Steelers are 0-0, Ravens are 1-0. So yeah, they, for that point being, they are atop of the division. So to the game itself, the Bengals defense is so terrible. Oh my God. They have allowed over 24 or more points in the last 4 games played. One of those games being against the Panthers, which insane. And just 38 points being given up. There's no reason that you should be giving up 38 points unless it's a shootout like this. And they had a 10-point lead for the majority of this game, too. A 10-point lead late in the fourth quarter, I might add. And the Ravens are known for being the ones to blow the lead as well. But, you know, this was a big Lamar Jackson game. This was a big Derrick Henry game. And the Bengals just wasted a big Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase T. Higgins game. I mean, there's no reason that the Bengals should be losing when Burrow puts up 392 yards, 5 touchdowns on 30 for 39 passing, and Ja'Marr Chase having almost 200 yards receiving, and both Ja'Marr and T. Higgins almost having Ja'Marr having 10 receptions and T. Higgins almost having 10 receptions as well. The Bengals are a mess. I feel like that they shouldn't be 1-4, but now they're 1-4. The outside looking in, they are at the bottom of the barrel, dug themselves a massive hole. And like, yeah, next week they got the Giants. But for all we know, the way that they've been playing, the way they played against the Panthers and Commanders, the Giants might actually give them a game. The Giants might actually give them a game next week. It's just bad. It's just bad.
Yeah, in their next 4 weeks, they have the Giants, the Browns, and they also have the Raiders during that span as well, with the Eagles in that mix during that 4-game span, which that could go a couple of different ways, considering how the Eagles are having their own issues themselves. I'm glad you brought up the Bengals, because just to add on to that, Joe Burrow in December is going to be 28, and their front office, the Bengals, their front office managed to piss off not only T. Higgins, who already had 1 foot out the door as is, not only Trey Hendrickson, who is their best defensive player, but also Ja'Marr Chase, who is Joe Burrow's best friend and their best offensive player outside of Burrow. How did you mess all of this up? Not only did you piss off your three of your best players on the entire team, you were just a couple of years removed from going to back-to-back AFC championships. You went to a Super Bowl in one of those years. And somehow you have found a way to screw all of that up. You are in one of the best positions to be in for any team in the entire league. And you somehow screwed it up in a couple different ways. I already brought up the players that they've pissed off in their star core, but also their offensive line. And I don't think they're looking at the issue in the right way. They keep on throwing personnel at it, acting as if that it's going to change. But their coaching on that line, that's the difference maker. Their offensive line coach, Frank Pollock, was hired from the New York Jets, who worked with the team from 2019 to 2020. They had bad offensive line play too. And they not once looked at their coach and said, this guy has to go. How is this line, with the personnel it has, that they have brought in constantly, still playing like one of the worst lines in the league? You've continuously neglected it. You've got your quarterback hurt. You cost your team being out of playoff contention, which pissed off all of your star talent. I mean, this Bengals team was at a point where they could have elevated their status from being one of the worst organizations in football to being one of the best for a few years, for years to come, With the young talent you brought in, they were all fast studs on both sides of the ball. You looked like the slam dunk contender to win the Super Bowl last year. Half of the co-hosts on this show had the Bengals going to the Super Bowl and winning it. And you somehow messed that up, and suddenly you're about to become the Bungles again. And I just can't believe how badly they screwed it up. You have to try to mess it up to be this bad. They're about to lose everybody. And if they lose Ja'Marr Chase, watch out for Joe Burrow to be asking that front office to also be out the door. Because at that point, you keep getting him hurt. You're losing all of his weapons for him. What is there that is keeping Joe Burrow on this team in 2025 and 2026? Besides his contract. If I were him, I'd be pissed, and I'd be wanting to be out of there too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a bad spot. Bengals have not done anything good for Burrow, really, besides getting him Chase and Higgins, who want to be out the door.
I just can't believe how badly they messed this up. It's really like this. They were in the best possible position to win a championship in 2023. They somehow messed it up. And now they're about to be another cellar dwelling team in the AFC who is just going to be constantly fishing for draft picks, looking for that next guy. Joe Burrow's 28. He's about to be 28. He's not that young kid who is going to be Cincinnati's savior anymore. He's 28 years old. He's not 20, 23, 24 anymore. I mean, like that, I'm not saying that that's old, but he's getting towards the end of his prime, which tells you how did you waste all of this time with Burrow on your team? It's unbelievable. All right. We'll move on because we've spent plenty of time on this topic. I think we've covered every angle we possibly could have. Unbelievable how that game and how these two franchises turned out this season. But we're going to get to what was our pick on our Friday episode for the Ruski Game of the Week, the Texans and the Bills. This was another thriller. And we're going to get to that next. This is the Fumble Ruski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Ruski Podcast. I'm Adam Wright with Justin Tucker, CJ Medeiros, and Chris Kostich. We are covering So after we finished covering what was potentially, again, we believe, the game of the year, we also had another pretty good matchup. We picked this game as our game of the week going into week 5, and that was the Bills visiting the Texans. And this game didn't disappoint in itself. So the Bills started out, they fell down hard. They were down 20-3, and Josh Allen willed his way to somehow come all the way back and tie the game with 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And CJ Stroud said, nope. Drove them all the way down the field, managed to get Kaimi Fairbairn kick a 59-yard field goal as time expired. Houston barely sneaks out alive, 23-20. The Bills are now 3-2 after a 3-0 start. Their offensive line play throughout these last 2 weeks has dipped a lot. And this is going to be interesting how this team shapes up the next few weeks throughout this season. They're 3-2 now. They still have Josh Allen, who, again, very nearly single-handedly won them this game. And they did lose to a Texans team that is expected to be a Super Bowl contender. I mean, they're 4-1. They haven't really shown many issues on this team. And the Texans, they managed to do this while being without Nico Collins for most of the matchup. Guys, your thoughts?
Well, I know how much CJ hates Sean McDermott, and Sean McDermott lost this game for the Bills. Let me read you this three and out with 32 seconds to go. First and 10 from the Buffalo 3-yard line. The Buffalo 3-yard line with 32 seconds to go. We're tied at 20. Josh Allen, pass incomplete, deep left to Keon Coleman. Penalty on Keon Coleman for offensive pass interference. Penalty declined. Second and 10 from the 3-yard line. Josh Allen, pass incomplete to Mac Collins. Third and 10 from the 3-yard line. Josh Allen, pass incomplete. You ran three pass plays in the matter of 11 seconds and wasted 11 seconds from your own 3-yard line. What
taking
the
a page out of Pete Carroll's playbook.
What the fuck made you think that you're going to get down the field in 32 seconds? You're not the Kansas City Chiefs from 21. You don't have Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce to just randomly get you 60 yards to get you into field goal range. Then they punt it away. Texans get amazing field position, two plays, 5 yards. They're in field goal range, and they were able to do that in 7 seconds. It amazes me. It amazes me how dumb some coaches are. It amazes me. Sean McDermott, I can't believe he's had a job this long if he's coaching this way. All right, enough of that. I wanted to get that out of the way because that Scott Hansen also had himself a mental breakdown over it as well. The game itself, I think that this is the first time, never mind the game last week against the Ravens. Ravens blackout, they're going to win that regardless. They're going to win that regardless. The stars were aligned.
It's not a logical argument.
It's a logical argument. Come on. The jerseys really up the vibe. Come on.
You know, I don't want to be that guy, but like that's kind of like saying the Cowboys are never going to get past the first round just because it's the Cowboys. You know what I mean?
And I haven't been proven wrong yet.
Okay, yeah. Cool. But throw a number at me or something. Come on now.
All right.
This is
the first time that the Bills really got exposed for the offensive weapons. You know, you also have Khalil Shakir out for this game, but I mean, drop passes here and there. Josh Allen gets hurt, whatever, but it's the drop passes, receivers not getting open. I mean, the Texans defense absolutely smothered this receiving core, and the only big offensive output from this game was James Cook, 20 carries, 82 yards, and a touchdown. And that's really the only good thing that came out of this game for the Bills, really. Nothing good really came out of it for them besides that, you know, they still have a run game now, which they've been lacking for the last however many years.
So, Chris alluded to this earlier about my feelings about Sean McDermott. He's a very okay head coach, but he's never going to be on that upper echelon, you know, with the Andy Reids of the world, you know. A lot of people thought he was. I wasn't fooled. And the worst part is I don't see this ending anytime soon. I really don't. Because I think that Buffalo is going to win the division. And because New England is in a rebuild, the Jets, you know, that jet exploded in the hangar, and the Dolphins took their whatever million-dollar man and turned his brain into goo. So Buffalo's going to win by default. And you with the worst part, and that's actually bad. It is bad for Buffalo to go there because that way Sean McDermott can go, oh, but I made it to the playoffs. That means we're good. No. Sean McDermott has literally just become a bald Jason Garrett. And that is the nice way of putting it. We get on coaches all the time, and I get that, for playing not to lose rather than playing to win. But there's such a thing as being too stupid. Like Chris said, three straight passing plays, three incompletions in 11 seconds. What would you have, like 30 some odd seconds left on the clock? What is wrong with you? Go to OT. You have a better shot that way. And I can already hear Bill's Mafia from over yonder saying, oh, but it's not our fault. We didn't have Khalil Shakir and Josh Allen doesn't have weapons. Like, okay, cool. Okay. And whose fault is that? Whose fault is that? You literally were so deep in cap hell that you got picked clean in free agency and you couldn't bring back any of your good players and you had to trade Stephon Diggs. Once again, that is only your fault. The entire state of this team is only their fault. This was preventable. Or at bare minimum, at least win a ring before you had to do a wholesale, but you didn't do that because Sean McDermott sucks as a coach. And on top of that, like Chris mentioned, Nico Collins was missing for most of the game. And I'm sorry, he's their wide receiver one. So sorry, he was their wide receiver one, but then again, they actually had the foresight to build a good enough roster by adding Diggs, which maybe you could have done that. Oh, wait. But there is one more thing that I've heard. Oh, but this is an excusable loss. Houston's good. Well, Buffalo started out 3-0, and they've lost their last two. This loss was against the Texans. The last loss was against the Ravens. I'm sorry. How are you going to claim to be the best if you can't beat the best? You are not a contender if you cannot beat other contenders in your weight class. And any argument to the contrary is Buffalo wishful thinking. And as for Houston, all right, that is kind of alarming how you were literally up by over two scores. And then you let Buffalo come back in. But, hey, you know, you got a lot to work on. You know, I know Nico Collins is out. But overall, a pretender would have let Buffalo come back. A pretender knows when to stop the choke and put your foot down. So, yeah, maybe, you know, just carry that onward to next week. Maybe you get Mixon back. Maybe you get Collins back. But for Buffalo, alarm bells have to be ringing. Like that.
Exactly.
All right. I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but Sean McDermott, what the hell were you thinking down the stretch of that game? That was abysmal. That was horrendous. And quite frankly, terrible head coaching. That's something John Harbaugh would do as a head coach. And anything that reminds me of John Harbaugh head coaching, you really need to think about what you're doing with your life. That's number one. Number two, when I first thought about this game, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, it's the Bills, it's Houston, two of the top teams in the AFC. This is going to be a good one. Stephon Diggs, a revenge game potentially because of the way he left Buffalo. And then the game happens, everything transpires, and I was like, okay, Houston escaped this game. It's not like they beat Buffalo tremendously. They escaped with their lives. And then at the end of the game, I saw Josh Allen and Diggs shake hands, but not say anything to each other. So I was like, maybe they didn't really like each other towards the end. But that's neither here nor there. Overall, I think this was a very good win for Houston, considering they didn't have Nico Collins in the lineup. And the Bills, it's not a good look to have Josh Allen look like he got concussed and then have him back in the game with only one play missed. I'm not going to lie. It just didn't look good, especially the way his head bounced off the field. So anything for a win, I guess. But why don't you go ask Miami how good that looks for you? Because it doesn't work long term, let me tell you that. So let's just hope Josh Allen is okay after that game, and hopefully he can still continue to play. But all in all, good Houston Texans, bad Buffalo Bills.
Yeah. And one last part to bring up, and since I led off the segment by saying Josh Allen single-handedly nearly won them this game, I'm going to hear a lot from anyone who isn't a Bills fan about his stat line, completing 9 out of 30 pass attempts, 56.4 passer rating, just 4.4 yards per attempt. What does he have to throw to? You have Keon Coleman, who has not looked like what he was supposed to do. He made that one catch that went 49 yards for a touchdown. He was barely in bounds for it. Great. That was a good play. What about the other four targets? One of them hit him in the head because he wasn't looking. Dalton Kincaid. That guy is not ready to be an elite tight end yet. He's just not there. He's shown flashes. He looks like a good, he could be really good. He's not there yet. He dropped a few passes he should have caught. And those were his top two targets today. Curtis Samuel was a complete nothing burger on four targets, made one reception for 0 yards. That's abysmal. I mean, this team is terrible right now. And you mentioned the coach. I didn't even bring him up, but Sean McDermott, a lot of the blame has been reflected off of him because of how good their roster has been over the years. They've had one of the better scoring defenses in the league ever since 2018. They've always had Stephon Diggs, Gabe Davis. They had Dawson Knox, which they still do this year, and he was another nothing burger this week. You had one of the best quarterbacks in football. As long as you're winning 11 to 13 games a year, you're not going to hear much blame from the head coach over the head coach. So now that the team is not that good and the quarterback has to make up for a lot more deficiencies than usual, you're going to see more blame on Sean McDermott, which might be good for the Bills. You get some of the worst qualities of your team intensified, for lack of a better term. That's going to be more motivation for the organization to fire their coach. And I feel inclined to believe that even if they win this division, that they'll still fire him. I hope they do. Good God, do I hope they do. If you're a Bills fan, you better hope this season is bad enough so that they end up firing him. Unfortunately, this division is so bad that the Bills are going to win this division. And because they also have one of the best quarterbacks in football, they're just going to end up going 10-7, 11-6 because their division is that bad. But still, I mean, there's a lot of things to worry about with this Bills team right now.
Josh Allen is basically the only reason why the Bills even have 3 wins right now. He's the only reason. No turnovers.
I just never understood using the stat lines to explain why a quarterback is bad. When you've seen with a lot of the best quarterbacks in NFL history have had some terrible statistical seasons when they had nothing to work with. Then the year after they end up getting weapons and they're back to their all-pro form. Look at Tom Brady in 2013. And then look at his stats in 2014. Look at Tom Brady in 2019. Then look at what he did in 2020. Look at Aaron Rodgers. Look at Peyton Manning on some of those years where they barely got by at 10-6. They just didn't have much to work with. And because of that, they're statistically going to be worse. This is going to be a down year for Josh Allen statistically. And you're going to hear a lot of people saying, see, Josh Allen isn't so good after all. Well, if you don't have any targets to work with, like this is going to, you're going to hear a lot of that, especially after this season is over.
My heart bleeds for him. So sad.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Tuck, did you manage to get a take from this yet?
Yeah, I got a take.
Nice. All right. Let's move on. We're going to go to our week 5 top 3, bottom 3 with Chris Kostich. This is the Fumble Risky Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns. Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Risky Podcast. I'm Adam Wright with Justin Tucker, CJ Medeiros, and Chris Kostich, who is going to spearhead our week 5 top 3, bottom 3. Chris, the floor is yours.
A lot of great games this week, huh? A lot of great games. Falcons, Bucks, Ravens, Bengals, Jaguars, Colts, Cardinals, 49ers. Packers game was pretty good. Giants squeaking out a win. This was a good week of football. I'm happy to say that this is a great week of football. With that, we get into the top three, bottom three. Top three leading off the charge. Cardinals getting the win against the 49ers. Shut out the 49ers in the second half, which is pretty wild considering that isn't the 49ers supposed to have all their guys? That's pretty crazy.
After, I guess.
And especially because Cardinals were a little bit cold. You know, they had a great week one game against the Bills. However, they did blow a lead, but they hung in there with the Bills. And then they go out, whoop the Rams' ass, but then they take two tough losses, the Lions by a score, and then they get their ass handed to them by the Commanders. So this is a great, great bounce back win on the road, I should add, as well. So that's why the Cardinals get the first nod to the top three. Second team on the top three, the Baltimore Ravens. Pretty much something similar to the Cardinals, right? Except this was an absolute shootout from the word go. 41-38, Ravens coming back down 10 multiple times and was down 10 basically the entire game and squeaked away with a win on the road. On the road. And now they lead the AFC North. Last team, Jacksonville Jaguars. Another shootout on the list. And another team that on the receiving end of being on a win on a shootout, and that being the Jaguars. And Trevor Lawrence probably having his best game of the season, fending off a huge Joe Flacco game. Flacco went 359 yards in this game. Lawrence went 371 yards. He did have an interception, but still a very good game from him, 28 for 34. Tank Bigsby, 13 carries, 101 yards. Brian Thomas, 5 catches, 122 yards. And they get their first win of the season against their AFC division rival. That's the top three. Thoughts from you fellas, if you guys want to put some input. Obviously, we kind of basically already talked about it prior since we were discussing who should be on either side. But
I mean, I already brought up the Ravens. Like, not only did they keep themselves in the hunt for their own division, but they kind of did the rest of the conference a favor by ridding the entire conference of the Cincinnati Bengals from playoff contention. I mean, now that they're 1-4, there's a minuscule chance that they come back and make the playoffs. I mean, that is huge, not just for the Bengals, but for every team in the AFC. So you have no disagreement from me there.
No, I wholeheartedly agree. Even after the Ravens, just the Cardinals upsetting the Niners was huge. And the Cardinals, whose defense isn't even supposed to be that good, shutting down the Niners in the second half, that's insane to me.
As much as I want to brag about the Ravens, which I always will, I'll give it to the Cardinals. No one expected them to beat the 49ers. The 49ers are struggling more than I thought, but this is still a good one for the Cardinals.
Oh, I still have issues with that Cardinals team. And maybe it's just the fact that I'm angry that I started Marvin Harrison Jr. in three leagues and he sold again. They don't know how to use that kid. They do not know how to use him right now. They're either force feeding him the ball or they're playing their normal offense. They play well and then they still can't get him the ball. It's one or the other.
Yeah, it's weird how they're still trying to figure it out. But I mean, it's probably one of those things that you're still trying to figure out how to get the rookie involved. But this is also one of the top prospects that we've seen in a while. So it's still a little concerning. But in terms of going in the right direction, that Cardinals are starting to go in the right direction. But there was one game where they were able to figure out how to get him the ball. They just need to keep going back to that. But it's only week 5. Go to the bottom three. First team on the list, the Seahawks. You lost to the Giants. Lost to the Giants. That's honestly, we could just end it right there. We could just end. We don't really need to say anything about it. They let Daniel Jones look amazing for some reason. Darius Slayton. I don't know why Darius Slayton's getting 122 receiving yards on you. I don't know why Daniel Jones is getting more than 250 yards on you. And you only ran the ball 11 times. You only ran the ball 11 times. And you have Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet as your running backs. And you only run it 11 times. That's insane to me. That's pretty insane to me. Next team on the list, the Browns. Honestly, they should just deserve to be on here for every week that they have Deshaun Watson as their quarterback.
That contract looks worse and worse and worse as the season goes on.
He's probably going to end up costing Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry their jobs.
And it sucks because Kevin Stefanski, I think, is still a great coach. And it's just, what else are you supposed to do? You're paying this guy this much money. And, yeah, you kind of have to start him if you're going to pay him that much money. But at the end of the day, you got to make business decisions. So the business decision here, you got to bench him. But we'll see if that –
they won't bench him. They can't. The owner won't let that happen.
Exactly. That's the point. That's the point that I'm trying to make is horrible. You really can't.
They managed to play winning football with Joe Flacco.
A Super Bowl champion.
Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't do it with Deshaun Watson. It's we know who the odd man out is.
Yeah. I don't know. Our last teams, I should say. I think this is the second time we've had a game as our bottom three or part of our bottom three. The Dolphins Pats game. As someone that was at this game, everything about this game was just terrible because you have the Pats with 12 penalties, which is terrible in itself. It was a rough show the entire game. Just terrible penalties all around. There was a roughing the passer call called on the Dolphins that where Brissett literally was not touched. There was a false start called on the Patriots, and the Patriots weren't even set at the line yet, and they called them for a false start. Besides all the ref ball bullshit, as someone that went to the game, this fucking sucked. The game itself sucked, but also oddly entertaining. You had a missed field goal off the upright. You had another missed field goal from Joey Sly. You also had a field goal where the snap rolled to the holder. Christian Gonzalez got an interception. And then you also had a little bit of drama at the end. So for all the stupid shit that happened, it was a little bit entertaining. But and as someone that went to the Patriots-Chargers game from last year that ended 6-0, I'm happy that I got to see a touchdown. I got to see a touchdown today. But yeah, everyone knew this was going to be the toilet bowl coming into it, and it lived up to it.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Dolphins fan commenting under one of our posts yesterday, throwing stones with a glass house, kind of talking a little smack about the Bills. And I couldn't believe it. This kid said, at least we can win a game with a third-string quarterback. I couldn't believe somebody was actually bragging about beating the New England Patriots in 2000. I couldn't believe it. That was a complete suck fest. Whoever wins that game is not who's better. It's who sucks less. And the Patriots simply sucked even more than the other. And they were one Jalen Polk non-catch away, but in the way I look at it, if it's that close, if you can only muster up 10 points that late in the game against that team, that's on you for leaving it in the hands of the refs to overturn that call. When, yes, it should have been a touchdown, but there were a lot of bigger problems than just that. And, oh boy, both of these teams suck. And you should not be bragging if you beat this Patriots team. No, not at all.
No. I mean, kind of to touch on the Pats even more, because really, like, both teams are on this list on the bottom three, but kind of leaning more towards the Patriots. You kind of have reports coming out this week as well about a potential mutiny in the locker room because Drake May's not starting. And, you know, you could say that's Boston Radio just being Boston Radio. We all know how that can be. I hate listening to Boston Radio as someone that lives in Massachusetts because I just hate it. It's just spewing bullshit. It's the same people that said It's the same people that say that the Celtics ring doesn't mean anything because they played nobody, which they played people. Maybe they're playing the people that they play in front of them.
I mean, their conference is trash. I mean, that's
yeah,
that's not on them. They better win at least three rings. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
To turn this into a basketball podcast.
Back to football. But kind of to expand on this, if the Patriots go to Drake May this week against the Texans, that's absolutely stupid. That's fucking stupid. If you're not going to start him against this shitty-ass Dolphins team, why are you going to play him against the Texans team that is way better than what the Dolphins are right now?
Yeah, I got to agree. And I'm hearing a lot of Pats fans say, oh, this is Mayo's fault. It's like, you know, you can blame Mayo and you can blame Wolf, but, like, no one wants to play in New England. Like, you would really have to overpay mediocre players to just even think about coming here. And then it's like, why won't they start May? It's like, okay, cool. You have the worst offensive line in the league. And here's the thing, like, on paper, it's not terrible, but there is one thing you got to give them a little bit of a mulligan for. They got crushed by the injury bug. You know, the injury bug is killing them.
And Jabril Peppers.
I have some breaking news.
What's up?
We got.
This Patriots segment is very much well timed, but the Patriots are planning to start Drake May at quarterback on Sunday against the Texans.
Drizzy's getting
Hold on. Yo, Pats fans, are you happy? See what your incessant whining and bitching has done? You are putting Drake May on the fast track to be the next David Carr. And then you have all these smug, jackass Bill Belichick apologists that are then saying, oh, see, I told you. Like I said before, these old-ass Patriots fans, like, you youngins don't know. I said it then, and I'll say it now. Go ahead and die for me, because you are a net negative on society. And look, and by the way, and I'll end it with this. Did you see that jackass Bill Belichick on Pat McAfee throwing stones at Mayo? Like, it's like, well, I don't know what their plan is. No, the first order of business is cleaning up your goddamn mess. Debate a wall. But yeah, look, I like Drake May, but we've had five different offensive line combinations in five different weeks. And now you're just going to throw them at the mercy of Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. And now you got all these fans like, finally, oh boy, yeah, congratulations. You've literally, like I said, put him on the fast track to be the next David Carr. I hope you're happy. If he wins somehow, then praise be to God, a miracle has happened. But, oh my God.
I can't wait to clip this later.
Oh yeah. This is going to be fun. Turning this into a segment because this is the breaking news of the hour here.
That's crazy.
Patriots planning to start Drake May. This is going to be his first career start, obviously. And this is something that we've talked about a little bit back and forth on, this is something we've gone back and forth in our group chat about, but let's say they did decide to start. This is a hypothetical from before the decision was made, but we were saying, let's say they did start him against the Texans. That offensive line versus Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr. may be the worst possible start for a debut that I've ever seen. I mean, the whole plan was to start Drake May next year, or if things go well, later on this season. Now suddenly, you're just 5 weeks into the season. You're completely 180-ing it. Not only are you 180-ing, his debut is against one of the better front sevens personnel-wise in football. This may be... talk about trying to... You talk about the decision that you make, that you decide we're going to do things differently than we did with Mac Jones, right? We're saying we're going to make sure we take care of him. We're going to make sure we put him in the right environment to succeed. 5 weeks into that plan and you're ditching it. Holy shit, is this a turnaround? And did they not just say after the game, Jerod Mayo just reiterated that Jacoby Brissett's our quarterback?
Can't believe it. No, it was like the first game that he didn't.
Honestly, if you listened to Jerod Mayo speaking, you could kind of tell that he's starting to kind of stray away from having Jacoby Brissett be the starter. You can kind of just tell from the tone of his voice, like, a change's going to have to be made. And
he wants to win.
Unfortunately, it's this week. It would have made more sense to do it last week. But
what do y'all face this week?
They just covered the Dolphins they faced last week.
No, did you say this week or last week?
I thought I said this week.
Oh, this week. We just said the Texans.
This upcoming week, you mean? Or last week?
Upcoming week.
Yes, the Texans. Good Houston Lord. Texans, who are coming off a nail-biter victory. I mean, if there's any – there's no silver lining to this at all. I'm trying to find sort of – I guess there's a good chance they'll be playing without Nico Collins, who's now week-to-week. But, I mean, C.J. Stroud's going to be crying a river over throwing to Stephon Diggs, Dalton Schultz, Tank Dell. He's playing behind one of the better young offensive lines – in football. This is such a mismatch. There's nothing you can get out of this besides maybe stealing a few wins this season, but at what cost? You're going to get this kid killed.
Yeah, they literally just want another Mac Jones. And the thing is, I know the plan was to start Brissett and let May sit because, you know, we knew that we were in no shape to hold a rookie quarterback. And I heard Evan Lazar's report, you know, about, oh, there's going to be a locker room mutiny. You know, the friendless loser outrage peddler, Evan Lazar, you know, a staple of Boston radio who whines about everything. So once again, do I take that report with a grain of salt? Yes. However, Mayo's starting May. I'm going to throw out a conspiracy and leave it at that. Do any of you think that Kraft had a hand in this? That Kraft is getting angry with the on-field product and is forcing May in?
Because
you know how he was with Mac.
I'm inclined to think it's the opposite. I think Jerod Mayo wants to save his job. I'm not even looking at any sort of inside sources. I'm just thinking just logically. Jerod Mayo wants to save his job. There have been rumblings that he's been losing the locker room, right?
Mm.
He has been losing the locker room. If that is truly the case, that means Kraft is going to kick Mayo out and he's just going to bring in the next guy. He has no motivation to want to really win this year. Otherwise, they wouldn't have even planned on bringing in a bridge quarterback for May to sit in the first place. For them to force him in, that's a Mayo thing, it feels. At least as far as I'm thinking. But
man, this must suck to be a Patriots fan right now.
Oh,
what a time to be alive.
Well, Chris, do you have anything else to add? I know CJ's said his piece. I've been livid on this as well.
I said it right. All I really had to say was right before the news even broke and whatever I would have said would have been the same thing on top of whatever you guys said. So I got nothing else. This is, oh God, I don't even know what to think about this week. Don't even know what to think.
Yeah. So we're sitting here kind of the news just breaking as this continues. It just broke as we were talking about the Patriots, funny enough, on the show. This is as crazy of news that we have seen break during an episode that we have ever seen.
Probably, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, listen, it's not the fact that they decided to start Drake May. It's the fact that we are 5 weeks in. We're 5 weeks into the season. Not even halfway through. Not even close to halfway. A third of the way through the season. And you're sitting here and you've been saying for weeks now, it's Jacoby Brissett's the guy. He's a leader. This is his team. We believe in running a run-first offense and letting Drake May sit, be safe, not playing behind a bad offensive line. Let him learn, take his time, take a Jordan Love-like approach or an Aaron Rodgers-like approach as well. You can even throw in Patrick Mahomes, who sat a season. And then 5 weeks in and you ditched it right away. This was your third overall pick. Your third overall pick. I mean, this historically one of the worst seasons in Patriots history last season. The silver lining was you got a stud quarterback out of it who looked good in preseason and was showing some, drawing some pretty decent reviews out of training camp. The problem was that you couldn't start him week one. You couldn't start him this season because they didn't do anything to fix that offensive line. And it's gotten worse as the season has gone on. You didn't add anything as far as weapons. I know you brought in Jalen Polk. I know you brought in Javon Baker as far as draft picks go. You also brought in, you brought in KJ Osborne. Fine. Cool. None of those are established wide receiver ones. And I know you drafted Jalen Polk in the second round, Javon Baker in the fourth round. Banking on one of those guys to pan out as a plan is not a very good plan. You're basically, it's a shot in the dark. Those late round picks, especially in the fourth round, those are shots in the dark where you hope you hit on something. It's not a plan. If you plan for your fourth round wide receiver to be your guy, they might end up working out. It happens pretty often, but it's not a plan. And if you are a front office member who is doing that as a plan, you deserve to be fired. So, like they barely dipped their they had three major needs this offseason: quarterback, tackle, wide receiver one. They hit on one of those three, and the other two they gave the finger to. Which is ridiculous. You're trying to build a team around a young quarterback. You're trying to invest in the future, and you didn't do anything to help this quarterback out. Did you learn nothing from your time with having Mac Jones on this team? Nothing. Oh, my God. Bill Belichick isn't even on the team, and they're making Bill Belichick-like decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah. As it comes to the front office, I get that you don't want to make that mistake of burning through all your money like year one, like a lot of rebuilding teams do, because New England did it in 2021. You know, you wanted short-term success at the expense of the long-term. And like I said, I know that you have to clean up Bill's mess, and I know that literally it was hard to lure free agents here because literally no one wants to play in New England. And even beyond the team being terrible, I mean, they're in Massachusetts and it's tax hell and it's cold. The weather sucks. Like, I get it. I mean, hell, they lost out on Calvin Ridley. The thing is, it's like, it wasn't for a lack of trying, but there's just so much going against them. And we can only pray that maybe they get it together next offseason, but that's a long way away. And the thing is, for athletes, once they lose their confidence, it's gone. Once their mojo's gone, they never get it back. So if you kill May this season, then they might just need a clean house. Because like I said, you know, New England has been hit with the injury bug. There's just so much going on, even on the defensive side of the ball. Bentley's done for the year. You haven't even had your star defensive tackle, Christian Barmore, yet. Jabril Peppers has been behaving like an idiot off the field, and Duggar's also hurt. And I get that. I do. But, like, still, just show some signs of life, because the special teams unit's been pretty solid. Defensively, they've been also pretty good. But then again, defense can't be as great as you want them to be when the offense keeps going three and out. Honestly, if you started May next week, because the Patriots' schedule, I won't say softens, but gets better after the Houston game. If you did next week, I'd say, sure, I'd grumble about it, but I'd be like, okay, fine, I can see it. But this week, I don't know. Like I said, I still think that Kraft is demanding Mayo start May, just a feeling, because he did that back.
And one more point too. Now I'm just thinking about it too. It's like, because one of the big things probably that there's the potential mutiny in the locker room and whatnot is that everyone in the locker room knows that Drake May is the better quarterback. Everyone knows that, right? There's no, shouldn't be an argument at all. And you got Jacoby Brissett out there who can't push the ball down the field. And now you got guys on the team that are like, well, I got this guy as quarterback who's not the best quarterback on the team, and now he's going to be ruining my potential paycheck. He's going to be ruining my stats and what I should be getting paid or what I could potentially be getting paid further down the line in 3 years once I get out of my rookie contract. So, yeah, I would completely understand if there's a mutiny because there's – freaking millions of dollars at stake, especially when you have Jacoby Brissett, who's just there to get his ass kicked, and Drake May, who's supposed to be the future and is the clear-cut better quarterback. It's tough to get behind a head coach or just anyone in general when you have that going on. And shit, the Browns could be in a similar situation as well, where you have a guy at quarterback that is clearly not the best quarterback on the team, and you know that you're not going to perform the way that your team should be.
Look, the most important part of a rebuild is making sure that quarterback is on his feet. If you're going to draft him, you have to make sure you have a good offensive line. And if you neglect the defense a little bit, I'm actually okay with that. It's not the end of the world if you start a rebuild by going mostly offense and neglecting the defense a little bit. That's what the Chiefs did when they first brought in Mahomes. When Mahomes first started games, that defense was really bad. But they still went to the AFC Championship and they still had a very good season because they had the quarterback with the offensive line and the targets around him to throw to and a good coach. The Patriots don't have that. They've kind of played with, let's have the defense, let's bring in the quarterback and not have any targets, not have any good offensive line, and hope for the best. That's the worst way you could possibly rebuild a team. The worst way you could possibly do it. If you draft a defensive stud and just throw them out on a bad team, they can still play well because they don't need any protection. It's just the nature of playing defense. You don't need that much protection for it. In fact, you don't need any. It's independent of who's around you. But for a quarterback, they need to be protected or else they're going to die.
The only thing I'm looking forward to this week is the Pats wearing the retro reds. That's the only thing I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, so they'll look good while they get an ass beating.
Yep.
Okay.
And they lose their prize number 3 overall pick. It's ridiculous. It's an absolute utter travesty. And with that, we're going to move on to a Thursday night football preview real quick.
On that happy note.
Yeah.
All right. Seahawks 49ers. This is going to be a fun one. The 49ers have not been playing as well as they could be to start this season. It's been a slightly rocky start, as we've seen a lot from teams who lose the Super Bowl the year after. It's very rocky the next season. A lot of them still end up making the playoffs, but they just don't look the same most years. After you lose the Super Bowl, you just don't look like yourself. And the Seahawks have had a decent start to the season. Outside of last week, holy crap, that was bad against that Giants team. But I think this is going to be a really good matchup. You have two teams coming off some pretty bad losses, and I think you're at a point where you expect both of these teams to come out with a bit of a chip on their shoulder. And it's a divisional matchup. And for that, I think this is going to be one of the better Thursday night football games, in at least as far as the pregame hype goes. One of the better showdowns on Thursday night football.
Yeah. 49ers coming off of the loss to the Cardinals. Not scoring in the second half. Seahawks coming off of an even worse loss to the Giants. honestly, this could be a very, very easily a coin flip game just based off of how both teams are playing. But I'm going to go with the theory of what Adam used with the Jaguars game last week. I don't see the 49ers being 2-4 as much as I do seeing the Seahawks being 3-3. I'm going to go with the Niners. Not to say both teams aren't due for a bounce back win. I just can't see the Niners losing three in a row, or, well, it's not three in a row, but three of, or it would be 4-5. I don't see the Niners losing 4-5 as much as I see the Seahawks losing three in a row. So give me the Niners.
All right. Quick, CJ. We're just going to move a little quick.
I'd have to go with the Niners because, look, it's in Santa Clara. That's good. And I know they just lost to the Cardinals, and that sucks. But Seattle just lost to the Giants without Malik Nabers. And not to mention Seahawks O-line hasn't been great. The defense is still banged up. And I know it's a divisional game, but I'm leaning toward the Niners on this one.
I need an upset here. I'm going Seattle here. I think they can get the job done. The line's a little bit questionable, but to be honest, so is San Francisco right now. I'm surprised that they lost the Cardinals, and I'm starting to question that team right now. So I got Seattle, hopefully getting a bounce back win. Let's go, Mike McDonald.
Listen, over the past half a decade, this 49ers team, when all of their pieces have been healthy, have had a very hard time losing games. You can go all the way back to 2019. Just think about it. The only years where they were bad was when their entire team got hurt. And even during their contending years, whenever they lost games, it wasn't most of the time. It was not because that they were just playing bad football. It's because they were missing players. They have everybody right now. Besides McCaffrey, but they've won games without McCaffrey. He's more of a luxury than a need, I find. This is a tough one because they both have chips on their shoulders. They've both played very good football here and there this season. I wouldn't be surprised if either team wins this game. I'm going to go with the 49ers on this one. I wanted to join you, Tuck, in that upset pick, but the 49ers do not lose games often. At least they don't continue to lose when they have their entire core healthy. I think they solve this mini slump that they're on. This is a get right game for them. They're going to go 3-3. The Seahawks are going to go 3-3, and this is going to be a dogfight for the division the rest of the way in 2024 for the NFC West. I mean, these are going to be two storied teams for the rest of the season.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, what an episode, guys.
That was a fun episode. What 300 and going in and out with a bang.
Certainly wow. Worth it.
I mean, yeah,
Start out with Saul getting fired, ended with Patriots starting Drake May.
I mean, you said it. Like, for our 300th episode, this is probably one of the most hectic ones we've ever done. From covering that breaking news from Robert Saleh. Again, he was employed as a Jet for the entire time. Exactly the entire time we have had a football podcast, which has been all of 300 episodes in nearly 3 years, and he still never got fired. Then later in the episode, we're about to end it, and the Patriots decide to start Drake May against one of the best front sevens in football, where they have one of the worst offensive lines. Oh my God. And covering some of the best football games that we have ever seen. Oh, wow. Happy 300, guys, but that'll do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening to us. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram at FumbleRooski_podcast to keep up with our podcast and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, we will see you next week. Over and out.